Welcome to the Futile Podcast. Tonight, it's Michael and Ian, and we are going to talk about the two-season series with Gillian Anderson, The Fall. It's kind of a name when I say it, I always feel like it's going to be confused with other stuff, because it's sort of a... It's an odd name for the show, too. Like, I'm not really sure where they're getting that from. It's not the season that they're talking about, and it's not like it's some huge... organization that's being undermined and collapsed, but I don't know. Maybe you know more about it than I do. Anyway. You don't? Michael, why don't you take the reins on this one? Maybe lay out a little bit about what's going on and kind of say what you like, what you don't like. This is one we've both kind of mentioned in our own conversations and talked about, and we were excited for the second season, I think. I know I was, especially because of the way the first season ended. It was a pretty good cliffhanger and kind of an interesting potential turn for the antagonist, I guess, as it were. This, before we start, everyone listening, all the thousands and thousands of people that are listening, this will be a full-on spoiler podcast. So, Michael, what's this show all about? What's going on in The Fall?
So basically, its story revolves around the two main characters. We have the protagonist, which is Gillian Anderson, and the antagonist, which is Jamie Dornan, 50 Shades of Grey fame. And basically, and I'm not sure, because it's not a mystery series, so it's not typical in that kind of fashion. You're not going to get spoilers like that. Jamie Dornan plays a serial killer. And Gillian Anderson is called in. It's a serial killer. It's set in Northern Ireland. Gillian Anderson is called in from London to assist with the investigation. It's a cat and mouse type show. I think what makes it different from other cat and mouse type mystery shows are, one, that Jamie Dornan is a very likable human being, aside from killing people. He's a family man. He's got a very smart, intelligent wife who's a nurse. He's got two children who he obviously cares for very much. And so he's not your stereotypical serial killer out murdering prostitutes or whatever. So that's very interesting. You know this absolutely from the get-go. You see him murder his, I think it's his second victim on the first episode. Also, the role of Gillian Anderson, she's a very strong female character, which is kind of a blanket, boring phrase that people throw around a lot, but she is very multidimensional. She has her own vices that she deals with and her own battles and struggles, and so that makes her a very believable three-dimensional character. And so it's a very, very unique show for both of those reasons, I think. Yeah,
you set the stage there for sure. I think that's a good point you make about the vices and things. Is it's not she's not being put up as sort of like all good or all great, but she's also, I mean, she's not a bad character. Like, it's not like she has like a drug addiction and she's awful to people, really. I think she's just got a certain kind of mentality that is unusual to see in a female character, at least. And certainly, you know, that's the way a lot of the other characters are behaving accordingly with her. Though I found that they didn't waste too much time with that sort of soapbox feminism kind of stuff. There weren't too many times when she had difficulty with other officers and had to kind of put them in their place, you know, like, this isn't 1946, it's modern times. Most of them listened and followed.
Well, that's what makes the show unique, is that there aren't the normal tropes that go along with female character in a position of power. And that's why it's considered by some people to be a very feminist show, because, like you said, she doesn't have those struggles with the male characters. She doesn't have to put people in their place. She tells people what to do and they listen. And this is like everything that they've set up with her is a very unique approach to female characters in television and in film.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, but that same respect, I think that the decision for it to be her, for it to be a female character that is this kind of character, that is kind of I don't know what the term would be. She's not. I mean, she knows what she wants from a sexual standpoint. She's not particularly aggressive, but she kind of doesn't eschew it, I guess. And so you have that in her, and then you have the antagonist, Peter.
Paul Spector.
Paul. Oh, right. Paul Spector is not his real name, though, right? Because his real name was Peter, and then he changed it. And he's got some sort of backstory with being in foster care and things that kind of, I guess, is supposed to shine some light onto some kind of pathology that he has.
Like, but it doesn't really.
Not entirely,
because
no.
they expect it. Remember, they're looking for a reason that he is the way he is, and they expect that he's been physically or he's been molested by this Catholic priest and that kind of stuff, and he hasn't been.
No, he hasn't been, but he had feared that would happen. He took steps to ensure that it wouldn't. So I guess he's kind of had maybe a confrontational relationship with authority, maybe, and certainly things like that for most of his life. Which is, I think, the other interesting thing about the antagonist, beyond the, you know, you set it, give him a family, you give him a little boy and a little girl, a daughter, you know, which is like this incredible juxtaposition, or you know, the fact that this guy has got this really twisted, you know, female fetish killing thing going on. Mm-hmm. But then he's also, you know, so he goes and does that, and then he goes and he, you know, tells his daughter who's, you know, that there's no monsters in the bed or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
It's it's odd, and I'm not quite sure how I feel about it or what I make of it. But the other side that I found kind of extra compelling is his profession. That he's a it's kind of tough to say if he's like a particular kind of therapist, because he's counseling a couple who's been through a trauma when their son died, but he also in season two counsels, you know, in the greatest twist, one of his own victims who, you know, managed to get away. So like he's some sort of a, you know, trauma counselor, you know, like psychologist. Mm-hmm. And so you start to wonder how much of his mentality is a complete and utter sociopath like lie. You know, I mean, he looks the woman who he attacked and tried to kill right in the eye as her counselor and tells her, you know, like, this is not your fault. he tells her everything that a reasonable, good person should tell her. And that's, yeah, I'm not quite sure what to make of that. So I feel like for me that was really the big standing point. The novelty of the, you know, strong female character and her behavior was and just generally being on it was appealing as well. I mean, a good procedural show that's not just like murder an episode kind of like crime CSI thing. It can be appealing, and in that sense, I think I found it to be pretty appealing. I liked sort of they got into some of the minutia of just the bitter work of, you know, working the case and digging through the muck to try to find a, you know, a pair of scissors and lift a print. So in that sense, it was, I liked it, but I also really was more, especially towards the end of the first season and going into the second season, I was more excited by this idea of maybe this conflicted character who's essentially, he's saying that he's done and that he's not going to get caught again. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to tell based on the things that happened in season two, if he was, you know, if he was maybe going to somehow, at least for the time being, kind of make good on that, because he doesn't start to plan another murder. He doesn't really start to case a new woman or anything. He has to deal with other things that seems to be more related to covering his tracks and trying to manage this babysitter situation.
He doesn't actually murder anyone in the second season.
No, he doesn't. It's all repercussion stuff. I mean, he kidnaps someone, and with, pretty much essential intent that she probably would die. So that's there. But yeah, so I mean, it's just, I think for me it plays, like you said, there's no mystery angle. It's not about that. It's not really. I mean, it's more. I mean, it's just. I would say out and out, straight up. It's a little bit of a procedural, and it's by and large is sort of a thriller. I mean, a psychological thriller. You know, we kind of get into the get into his psychology a little bit, but we also just kind of like you said, watch the cat and mouse thing happen, and to the point of a few moments of general kind of strange absurdity, like when he's in her hotel room. And like hiding, and then happens to slip out just at the right time, and a few other moments.
Well, that's I read, I don't know if my sister said this, but she was saying that the second season wasn't as creepy as the first season, and I don't think I would agree with her, because while he is super creepy in the first season, because he's going into these, he finds a woman that meets his criteria, which is generally a woman with long dark hair, usually a professional of some sort, and he will break into their house, and I think he like clips the bows off of their underwear or their bra or something, and just does these subtle things, like, so they're not completely sure if there's an intruder in the house, but they're set, like, ill at ease, and then at some point he decides to go back in and murder them. And it's very creepy, especially when you're first watching the show and you're not knowing what to expect. But I almost think that the second season is creepier because of aspects like that, because of when he breaks into Gillian Anderson's hotel room and reads her journal and writes in it. And there are just these subtle things about him. I think when he goes into the woman, so the woman that he kidnaps is the woman that he first sort of attempted to kill back in university days, and didn't succeed. I'm not sure that he actually wanted to kill her. He just started to strangle her, kind of a thing, maybe realizing at that point that this was his potential. And so she's been helping the police because they found this connection, and he finds out, of course, because she was the only one that it could have been, that she's been talking to the police, and he breaks into her house, and her little girl is needing to go to the bathroom. So he helps her find the bathroom, and he teaches her a tongue twister, and has her go to bed, and then it's just this scene where she feels the camera is just showing the woman lying in bed, and she feels someone lay in bed with her. She thinks it's her husband who's asleep on the couch below, and it isn't, of course. It's Spectre, and he puts his arm around her, and then all of a sudden she knows, like, it's Spectre. And it's those little things in the second season that I think actually make it creepier than the first.
I'm inclined to agree. It's less of the kind of generic, oh, look at his weird fetish stuff, and more just, like you said, just what's he gonna do? What's happening now? Oh my God. And then at the same time, there's always this weird, because of these other aspects of the character and these other scenes, there's this weird kind of, like, I don't know. You don't by any stretch of the word, like, root for him or anything, but you kind of just want him to figure it out and be okay, It's really tricky.
Well,
I don't know what to
because
make of it.
because he has his family aspect, I think, is the big thing, especially the scenes with his daughter.
Right. That's exactly what it is. It's you just kind of want Yeah, you want to be able to like separate the person and just like just,
Yeah.
let's just you know execute the awful bit and you know let's chemically
Yeah.
castrate the guy and give him electroshock therapy and then let him go back to his family. You
Yeah,
know what I
and
mean?
the daughter is really like she loves her daddy, she misses her daddy. She wants to know why, you know, she can't marry her daddy when she grows up. And it's those parts that really make you, although you're not like rooting for him necessarily, you want him to just be a father. Just go and be a father and stop being a creepy killer.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And I mean, there's just when it finally comes down to it, and he's finally captured, and there's finally interrogation, and I feel like, I mean, I was hoping there'd be more of that, that they would really have gotten into it. There's good bits, but they don't really hold on that too much. But just the idea that like at one point this guy, you're right, like it, so he's in university, he's and he, you know, strangles this girlfriend of his who fits the profile that he's going after, with the long dark hair, you know, intelligent professional, or you know, moving towards that direction, I guess, at college, and then switches gears and ends up with this blonde woman, you know, married to her, two kids, and then the fact he brings up a great, she's like, you started on this path when she's, you know, interrogating him. And she's like, then you stopped for a really long time. And what happened, you know? And he's like, well, you don't have children. But if you have kids, you realize that they're kind of a handful. So it was just like the reality of the fact that he wasn't out murdering people because he was
He had to
busy,
take
you
care of
know.
his kids.
Yeah. So-and-so had the stomach flu and we had to sit and drink, you know, 7-Up and watch a Disney movie for at 3 o'clock in the morning. And that's like reconciling, I think for me that is really, I'm finally arriving at it. It's the normalcy reconciled with the sociopathy of it all. It's like this guy can be so psychotic at sometimes towards some people, but then be kind of just a father in other respects. And I'm just
Just a
not
normal
sure what to make of
person.
it.
Yeah. And just like a normal person, just like you're right, like his job is also a really interesting aspect of his character, that he was counseling this woman and this very violent man who actually is more, you almost feel more disgusted by him at points than you do with Spectre's character, because he's just this overtly abusive, violent man, and he encourages the wife to seek help and you know, go into, I don't know what you call it, a protective institute for abused women. And
Right,
that is just,
Spectre does that. Yeah. As in his capacity as a counselor, he.
as a counselor, this is the couple that has lost their son, and the husband is obviously very abusive, and he's kind of a thug. He's got a gang.
Yeah, which is a little strange. That part, that aspect of things, especially in season 2, seemed like where from a storyline standpoint, it started to leak into being a little overly coincidental. In terms of when he encounters Spectre out on the street, you know, and then everything kind of falls apart because of that. But at the same time, I like the irony of that contrivance in that the reason that Spectre is caught is because he did something good for a woman. And this creep, like you said, this thug, her husband, this criminal guy, is kind of like the more overt bad character in the story, though it feels like it's sort of a B plot, but it ends up not being that because it's just another way to kind of get at the character.
Even to the point where he pays a visit on the wife when the husband isn't home, and she wants him to comfort her, to sleep with her, and he refuses to do it. So it's this very weird, these moral, very moral situations and decisions that he makes, juxtaposed with, you know, him being a serial killer.
Right.
And even the woman, I mean, in the second season, I think she has highlighted hair, but I even think she has dark brown hair.
Yeah, I couldn't. She was definitely, yeah, more of a brown. Not. I mean, not so much of a black hair, but I mean, I think it was black. Whatever. Yeah. So I mean, getting into that, I'm trying to think of what else we've got. So he once they start to get on to him, he kind of has this panic towards the end of the first season, and because the third victim or whatever, for some reason he gets sloppy. He gets in a rush to try to kill her.
So what happened was that the woman he killed, so he had killed like two women. Then the third that he killed was like the perfect, whatever it was about her was perfect. And he finds out after the fact that she was pregnant. And because he has this, he is very protective of children, that the perfection of that kill was tainted because he killed a child. So he rushed into this fourth murder to sort of wash away the third one, so to speak. So he rushed into it, and as he's killing her, her brother walks in, and so then he's got to kill the brother, but because he didn't get to finish killing the woman, she doesn't actually die.
Right, she's pretty beat up, but by the end of that first season, she's coming out of a coma or whatever, and there's the idea that now she could possibly identify this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's kind of on the outs with his wife by the end of the first season for various reasons. Oh, right. The alibi that he needs to create for the wife has to do with, you know, him making up this story about, this is actually going to lead into a pretty big part of what happens in the second season about him with this, this babysitter, this 15-year-old who's, I guess the word would be, precocious, maybe.
Yeah.
This babysitter is kind of coming on to him, and he doesn't want to go there. Like you said, I think it's still on some level that the protective of children thing, maybe. Mm-hmm. A little bit, which, you know, does connect to his childhood. I think the idea of being like in a exposed to a situation where other children were being physically abused and sexually abused and all that stuff. So yeah, so he doesn't have anything to do with that and do with this babysitter. It ends up becoming a good excuse. It's one of those, like, if you need to lie to somebody and you want them to believe it, sometimes it's better just to tell a more, you know, not necessarily more awful, but like a more believably awful lie, you know? It's like,
so he says he's having an affair with this 15-year-old as opposed to going out and murdering women.
Right, and so then that puts him in the doghouse with the wife pretty much indefinitely, I would say. So he's gone off and disappeared for a while the investigation is still plowing through, and there, as the second season starts. And then he, I guess, decides to head back home, try to resume his life, starts being a therapist again, and sees the victim, and which I'm not sure how that happened, if that was just another coincidence or if there was some way he...
No, he sought it her out.
Okay.
Based, because he calls whatever the program that he works through to become her counselor. So he seeks her out.
Okay.
When he knows that she's still alive.
Which makes sense.
Yeah. So I think... So him and the family go to Scotland to try to work things out, but he's distant and he's not responsive to the wife. So at the beginning of the first season, she has already taken the children back to Northern Ireland, and he's still
beginning of the second season, right?
Yes, that's what I said. So she's taking the children back to Northern Ireland, and he's still in Scotland. And then I think he comes back because he sees in the newspaper that there's this drawing of him from 9 years ago.
Right.
From this woman, Rose. And so he comes back to deal with that.
And that gives us that great scene on the train.
Yes.
with the blonde
with the
who used to
blonde,
have dark hair,
and she,
shows him her license, which has her address on it.
yeah, where he was like, "Do you think I look like this person?"
Yeah, he like takes and like draws in the beard that he has and makes it look even
Yeah.
more like him, just to
Yeah.
mess with her. He's trying to use his I guess this sort of disarming charm that he's kind of got maybe as a as a therapist and as sort of a generic handsome kind of guy. I suppose he can pull it off.
Generic.
Well, like I don't know, whatever. He looks like a lot of other guys, I guess, is what I'm saying.
So yeah, so then he's got to deal with this 15-year-old who obviously knows something's up.
Right, yeah, she knows, she figures something out about the timing of things, and just, I think she sees the picture in the paper too, and starts to put two and two together. Oh, and she found the hair, right? Because she went through his shit.
Right, she went through his stuff, she found the lock of hair.
Like any snooping babysitter would do, she went through
Right.
all of his stuff one time. Yeah, that's weird. Right. No, I expected just to get back to the train thing real quick. I expected that something more might happen with that. I thought that that might be someone he would start to maybe case as a potential new victim if he were going to get back into it. But then they really didn't go any direction there. I think that was just to sort of make the point that either he's moved on from that maybe on some level, or things just got busier and the plot just started to move things.
I think you can see the wheels turning when he talks with the woman, and you're like, oh, okay, so this might be the next, like, he's ready to kill again.
Right.
But obviously the situation with Rose and with Katie, I think is the babysitter's name.
That sounds. No, it's Kitty.
Kitty? Is it
Isn't it
Kitty?
Kitty?
So those things get in the way, obviously. But yeah, I think it's sort of just to show that he's ready to kill again. And yeah, I don't know. You've got the whole thing with the babysitter. That makes me wonder. Because the way they ended the second season, I thought they could go either way. They could not do another season. But I feel like a lot of things that he had the babysitter do were left unanswered. Like, we don't know what he had her do or why he had her do it.
Like the picture.
Like, the picture, he has her break into his house and take a picture of herself with a t-shirt of the image that the police are using to find him. But he also has her set up some kind of online account
Right.
that's
I think
never.
all of that was just his sort of last attempt to create a sort of believable worst case alibi with this babysitter, and also potentially to probably shift something onto her as being sort of obsessed. Like, I think it was because, as far as he's concerned, he's I don't think I'm trying to remember if he ever out and out admits to her, admits to the babysitter that he is the killer. I feel like he's playing this game with her where he tells her, I'm not the killer, but I'm pretending to be the killer because this pompous,
English bitch.
English bitch is coming around here, just flaunting herself and putting all of our people under thumb or whatever.
But I don't think the account is ever explained, because even when Gillian Anderson asks him about it, he acts like he doesn't know about it.
Yeah, it's possible that the babysitter had some of her own schemes going on. I don't know though. I feel like where it ends in season two is actually at the like and how it ends is probably perfect. I just
Yeah.
don't see I don't see what else you would do. I mean,
With
he could
his
still be
character, yeah.
alive and it could be like one protracted sort of series of interviews and a long court case that
Yeah.
just would start to, would probably start to unfortunately get into a lot of soapbox gender politics and everything else if they wanted to go that route, because it would just be stupid excuses for people to talk about the nature of his pathology and then for him to give his case on things or whatever else. So I don't know that I'd be particularly interested if they did do some kind of a third season. Like I said, I don't know what it would be though. So I think it's done.
Yeah.
I think it's two and it's done. It's 12 episodes. And like I said, the way that it ends, the way with the thug tracking him down while he's doing kind of a Seven like moment, where he's like, "I'll take you to where, basically I'll take you to the body of this woman that he's kidnapped," and they eventually find her in the trunk of a car that's in just like a very creepy way has been like driven. I don't even know how that car got there.
Well,
Like,
the
because it's
ambulance
over a
got down
hill
there.
and everything. Yeah, the other right, the ambulance. It's sort of in the woods, and she's barely still alive.
And he left
Driven
her
down.
food and water inside the trunk.
Yeah, a little bit. But he's surprised that she's still alive. Or at least he says that with a smirk, sort of. I think the one time where the only times he's ever kind of overtly sinister, I think, is when he's interacting with Stella, with Gillian Anderson's character, and he does have phone call interactions with her. He does in kind of the cat and mouse n trope that it's pretty much necessary. There is kind of a back and forth between the two of them. Yeah, and then he dies kind of in her arms, I guess. Because this
Well,
thug shows up and shoots
shoots
him.
him. Yeah, but that's the weird thing about the ending is he doesn't. He's dying and she's
Right.
trying to get, it's almost like this cliffhanger ending, but then you're
Right.
like, well, what more can they do? Like, they can't land the helicopter, so they can't get him to a hospital, and she's trying to stop the bleeding, and she's like shouting, "He's dying, he's dying. We're losing him,
Yeah.
we're losing him," or whatever.
Yeah. He's based on where he was shot, I'm fairly confident that they weren't going to pull any punches. I want to say it was a pretty well center of mass kind of shot. But yeah, and then just the context of things that they're not going to be able to get him airlifted out of there anytime soon. Not that they really should try, though,
Well,
you
they want him to go through I mean, it's sort of cheating to let him
know? Right.
die. They want him to go through the justice
Oh,
process and
absolutely.
things
Of
like
course they
that.
do.
So it's interesting that instead of going to the man that she's been sleeping with, she goes to Spectre and tries to stop the bleeding.
Right.
Because
Because the other cop, the newest cop that
he
she's
got
kind
shot
of,
first.
yeah, he got shot. I don't remember though if it was just abundantly clear that he was just kind of winged or if he's actually potentially on the ground dying too.
I can't remember. I feel like he was on the ground and he was looking at her while she's holding Spectre and holding the blood in, and he's like, "What the
Yeah.
hell?" Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's an aspect of that. And that is another thing you talk about her as a character. There is this I mean certainly from the antagonist there is this complex misogyny or maybe it's just straight up. But from her, from Gillian Anderson's character and it's addressed a couple of times, there is this kind of and they did more of it I feel like in the second season. And it was a little offhanded, and I wasn't sure if that was just them trying to be like, well, she's not like always right and always perfect, but she has kind of an unflattering attitude about just men in general. It's not just like the killer. It's and there are circumstances with one of the chief with the chief being drunk and trying to kind of go at it with her and her having to break his nose or whatever. Which kind of justifies that attitude in that circumstance about that person at that moment, but later on, it's he makes a statement. I mean, in the interrogation, when Paul is kind of responding to Stella a little, he's like, "Oh, you didn't mention the brother, the man that I killed. That never seems to get any press. Like that's just not important. Like his life matters less or something." So yeah, in that sense, like you say, this other cop, the second cop that she's slept with, that's just whatever, people are gonna do what people are gonna do. They work late, they get stressed, they need relief. No big deal there. But yeah, you don't really get a sense that like she, it's not that she doesn't care. She just kind of. She's very focused on her work. So when she's working, she's working. So I don't know. Yeah, I'm not so sure that they needed some of that other stuff that they kind of she didn't need to be kind of a man hater a little bit.
But yeah, and that's part of what people who are like, it isn't a feminist show, have to say. She's what do they call it, misandry, where it's right. like hating men, which I don't agree, because it's written by a man. It's written, directed, created by a man, so I don't think a man can create a show that's completely misandry. But I do agree that, like, some of it in the first season, when she sleeps with the cop who then dies. I can't remember how he dies.
He gets shot somehow.
At the scene of a crime or something. I can't remember.
Right. It's unrelated. It's a coincidental. Yeah.
Yeah. It's unrelated, but it involves her, and that sort of gives you an aspect of what kind of an idea of what she's like. And that is, well, I'll go back to that later, but, part of what bothered me about the second season was I feel like they threw in, like, that episode where the chief comes. I thought it was a bit much. Like, she goes down, she meets the pathologist.
Yeah.
For
That's
a drink.
What she says she is. When the guy approaches her with a drink, presumptuously. Right. What a piece of shit. No, he was an asshat, but I feel like her response to him was a bit harsh too. Like, although I don't remember if she told him to kind of just like, no thanks, leave me alone, before she decided to go full on like, I'm a pathologist. That means I study death. That means, you know, blah blah blah.
Right, you're skipping ahead though.
Oh, well, are we?
Well, yeah, because you're like, you're just like, oh, this man, and anyway, so anyway, whatever. So part of it is that she meets the pathologist for drinks. She goes to the bathroom to get she receives a call about something. And this guy approaches the pathologist. And obviously his attentions are like unwanted. He says he's a lawyer, and she says, well, that's nice for you. But so then anyway, Gillian Anderson comes back and kisses her. And they have like this little like makeout session, which I was anticipating coming. I was like, there's going to be some your typical lesbian type thing. And then she invites, basically, you don't see this on screen, she basically invites the pathologist up, and then the pathologist is like, I can't do this, and walks away. And I felt like that was uncalled for. I feel like that was, yes, we all get that Gillian Anderson is hot and she could probably have sex with whoever she wants. You know, but and then immediately after that we get the scene with the drunk chief and she breaks his nose, and I felt like that whole thing was very contrived. But that's really the only part about her character that I really found like they had contrived. I thought that just like wasn't necessary. Like I know that they needed a reason for her to be out of her hotel room so Spectre could break in.
Yeah, I feel like they had established some sort of in terms of her relationship with the pathologist, some kind of a potential affection aspect there. So to me, like I said, I was kind of expecting something might happen there. I wasn't expecting what it would be. And I kind of liked the way it worked, because it sort of flipped the script on the whole kind of way that men and women behave, because she's kind of taking on sort of a aggressor role there. And it's more than just that the pathologist is like, ah, I can't do this, and then leaves. There's this hemming and hawing, and Gillian Anderson is kind of trying to coax her. And in that sense, you kind of get her not doing anything nearly as bad as what the chief does, but kind of, you know, trying to be like, are you sure? Come on, you know? Like so it's this idea of like just sexually aggressive people being that way, and there is a little hint then at something that is a little more of a more than a vice, but a little bit of a flaw in her character, is maybe the way that she does kind of, you know, kind of use people for sex, essentially.
Yeah.
Now, as to whether or not it had to be, you know, a woman or whatever it says about like bisexuality or anything else, I'm not really sure that that's. I don't know. There's nothing I can really say about that. But I feel like it does offer that kind of weird juxtaposition, because then it puts her in a position later on when her and the chief sobered up a little bit to kind of be like, yeah, I was kind of doing the same thing right before you came in.
Right.
You know, yeah. So people just get aggressive, and if you've had too much to drink and if you're in a bad place, yeah. It was contrived. It was a bit melodramatic, certainly the chief stuff. I think the biggest problem I had with it is that I didn't understand what he was so upset about. He came in and it sounded like he just was like reliving being a jerk to a former colleague. It had nothing to do with the case, as far as I could tell. It just kind of came out of nowhere in that sense, I think.
Well, I think it was something that they had mentioned earlier, that they mentioned in passing, and I believe had something to do with the abusive priest.
Oh, yeah.
It was a past case of his that upset him.
Right.
And
that was probably it.
That's where that came from. And she was aware of it because she had worked with him previously. And I'm not sure if that's the case that they worked on together. And that's why he came to her. But yeah, I think it was tied in with that. But anyway, so she does have some kind of like these man-hating qualities, you think. But I guess that doesn't bother me. A big problem I have with the strong female character idea is that that's all they are, is they're this strong female character. And I read this, there's this great article on it, that I totally agreed with. And it was saying how male characters can have all these adjectives thrown onto them, like Sherlock is the example that they used. They can be neurotic, they can be jerks, they can be like all these different things, as well as being strong. They can be intelligent, they can be like all these things. They're not just this one-dimensional strong character. And that's what I like about her, is that she has these flaws. She has daddy issues. She loved her dad. And so, you know, it is whatever in her past, you know, informing how she treats men now. And she sleeps with people and is very like straightforward about it. She just goes up to this cop she finds attractive in the first season, gives her a room number to him. And basically is like, come visit me. And, you know, and that's it. She leaves it at that. She leaves it up to him to come and visit her and have sex. And he's married.
Right. She didn't know that, I don't think. Or did she? Was he wearing a ring?
I don't remember.
Because that's always kind of important to really assess the kind of personality you're dealing with.
Yeah. So she's obviously a very flawed character. She's strong. People listen to her. She knows her business, but she also has all these issues. And I think that whole first season side story with her and the cop that gets killed is interesting. There's this scene with her and the chief, who later gets drunk and makes advances on her, where he is, they found out that she slept with him like the night before he died. And they're trying to contain the situation, I guess. And the chief calls her into his office, and I don't remember what he says, but she says the main problem is, if I can remember it exactly, but so the quote is, she says, "That's what really bothers you, the one night stand. Man fucks woman, subject man, verb fucks, object woman. That's okay. Woman fucks man, subject woman, verb fucks, object man. That's not so comfortable for you, is it?" And it's just like, it's perfect, because I don't feel like, and even later when she's with the chief and she's like cleaning up his bloody nose from where she hit him, he says, "Why are women so much stronger than men?" And she says, "Well, everyone's a woman initially, and becoming a man is a birth defect or something." And I saw that used like against it, to say that she's misandry or whatever. But you see, she has a half smile when she says it. So I feel like in the first season, when she says this, she recognizes there's this issue with society, with men, between men and women. She recognizes that obviously she's fought it her whole life. She's worked her way up to the top and that kind of thing. But that doesn't mean that she's this like screaming feminist that, you know, burns bras or whatever. And to use that instance against her, I think is kind of misjudging the character, because I think she's joking with him. She's trying to make light.
A little bit. I think the context is incredibly important right there, because he really does give her a softball. You know, he's mm-hmm. just tried to essentially assault her. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was really, like you said, it was pretty, he came on pretty strong, and in a way that, I don't know, whatever. So, and her response was, you know, measured and correct. And mm-hmm. so then later on, you know, literally, you know, 10 minutes later, when they, you know, he sobered up a little bit, thanks to the
crack, you know, in the nose,
the knock to the schnoz. He's just, you know, he's behaving pathetically, and he's acting that way. You know, he's a flawed character. You know, he's an alcoholic on, you know, trying to, they just broke his sobriety, and mm-hmm. he's got issues too. You know, just, he is pathetic. And so he, you know, makes it easy for her, I think, right there. And I could see her being upset with him and making that statement. I feel like she makes it fairly matter-of-factly, but you're right. There is, I think, as with a lot of things that she's saying, there is this kind of, I don't know, maybe flippant cynicism about it, that we're, you know, she knows that's not the truth of you know, with a capital T, but mm-hmm. it's kind of just a way of thinking about things. And from a biological standpoint, she is correct.
Yes.
So there is something to be said for that. And if we wanted to get into more, you know, other elements of just society and everything else, I mean, as technology improves and everything, it really does get to the point where, I mean, I don't know, you could say we don't need either sex, but it does, certainly if we had to keep one, it would probably be the fairer
yes.
at this point. Because, you know, artificial insemination and yep. whatnot, you know?
Yep.
if they can do it to livestock.
Yep.
And so that does kind of, yeah, make it interesting. And they didn't really get into this that much, but it gets into the sort of odd kind of plight of masculinity in modern society a little bit.
Yeah.
for whatever that actually means or amounts to. I think that, yeah, the whole idea of kind of eventually maybe not so much eroding, but kind of losing the gender roles of those concepts being associated with traditionally male and traditionally female is probably a good thing. You know, she's behaving in ways that we would just, for lack of a better word, say are kind of, you know, typical masculine tendencies in terms of like her sexually aggressive nature and flippant attitude towards sex. But I mean, at some point we can just kind of evolve as a society to the point where we don't have to qualify it in such a way. Mm-hmm. It's just the way her character behaves, you know?
Yeah.
Got her tail that time.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Ah, I feel bad. Okay. Yeah, so, I mean, it was an interesting show. I forget what got me going on it. Was it? Did you recommend it to me, or yeah. did I just? Maybe I just saw Gillian Anderson was in it and thought, oh, I like X-Files. She does good stuff. Oh, another interesting Gillian Anderson character that'll be apparently, because she's going to be in it a lot more. And I don't know if any of these seasons are on Netflix or what, but that Hannibal show.
Oh, really?
She's on that. Yeah, what? She plays Hannibal's therapist.
Interesting.
It's got a lot of because it's another procedural creepy type thing. And apparently in season 3, she's going to be in it a lot more.
Hmm.
You know, that's all I'll say. Or in it more, maybe not a lot more. but yeah, sort of looking at another side of a complex female character, that would be a place to check it for her character especially.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, so in terms of where I'd kind of objectively try to assess or rate the fall, I think I'd probably have to give it a maybe just a straight up 4 out of 5. I mean, there's some contrived moments, but I feel like it from a plot perspective, it has a pretty good momentum.
Mm-hmm.
and just some really great scenes. And like I said, not every scene is perfect, and not every beat of the plot is free of contrivance, but I definitely enjoyed it. I mean, I think I watched it pretty quickly, the second season at least. I think I watched like the last four episodes in one sitting or something, which I guess isn't that uncommon. People are starting to get binge watching of shows is becoming quite a thing these days.
Yeah.
So what about you? Where do you land on this?
I don't, I think I'd give it maybe a 4.5.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And that's arguing myself down from a 5.
Oh, wow. That's usually what happens when we do these. We stop and we think about stuff and we're like, well, let's see about that. But, yeah. I mean, and just like getting into sort of other minutia of assessment from a visual standpoint, I'd say it's fairly drab, but it's well made. Like it looks decent. It looks good. But not amazing.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of particularly experimental or inventive camera work type stuff. Like I've seen
Which
them.
I feel is typical nowadays, so I don't really t count that against it.
Yeah, no, I don't really count anything about that against it. I'm just saying that, like in terms of looking for something to maybe elevate it a little more, if there had been something in terms of a sort of cinematic vision that was a then that might have been cool. But I mean, like, I don't think I remember any kind of long take involved camera work scenes or anything like that. Maybe there were a few, but nothing too crazy. So in terms of actually laying the story out, it was all just kind of, it was character and story heavy, and that was what it was. That was fine. Not a lot of action, no real gunfights or anything. I mean, a little bit, but. And yeah, I mean, I like these kinds of stories. I like the cat and mouse thing. It's always interesting to see how it will unfold. For season three, that is going to happen for the fall. Gillian Anderson and Jamie Dornan are both going to return. As to what capacity that is, who's to say? If Jamie Dornan will be in a hospital bed in a coma the half the time, or if he'll be in flashbacks and they'll still count him as. They have a trailer, but the trailer is nothing. It's just like the end shots from the season two, and just like there will be a season three, So what do you think? What do you think about what's going to happen with this third season? Or I mean, now that we know it's going to happen, we can talk about it kind of beyond just. I mean, it's still hypotheticals because we don't know anything, but there is a. I guess a greater gravity to the hypotheticals.
I don't know. I think the only thing that I surmised was maybe they would focus more on her character and the fact that she was trying to save Dornan instead of Merlin, the guy she was sleeping with. Oops. But I can't imagine. I don't know how much more they can do with Dornan's character since he pretty much confessed and everything. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't see how. I mean, the only thing I could think of is that they could go like the Silence of the Lambs sort of route, or maybe not really that, but sort of like there's a copycat and they need to use him as a consultant kind of thing. And then it's just more excuses to have him interact with her and them to play head games and who knows in the capacity of that he could end up escaping. I mean, I think it all comes down to what the circumstances are when the third season actually starts. If it's 5 years later and he's been in prison for a while and he's fully recovered from the bull, being shot, or if it's 3 hours later, and he's still in intensive care. The thing that I had forgotten about, I guess, is that there's still sort of those lingering aspects of what the babysitter was doing, what Kitty was doing t with the with taking photographs and stuff. So it might involve her more heavily. Like you said, though, they do have him pretty dead to rights on a lot of things, I want to say. So in terms of it being any kind of a big, showy courtroom back and forth, I just don't see that happening. He's not like a millionaire, so it's not like he'd be able to afford some huge, high-profile lawyer. Unless they make it about gender politics or something, and some lawyer comes in because he's, trying to defend the. I mean, I don't know. They could really go in some pretty, what I feel would be kind of directions I wouldn't want to see for the show to go.
Correct.
But I don't know. I mean, there's not a lot to say because there's not a lot, not a lot known other than that the two characters will be there. What would you want to see, I guess, would maybe be a good way to discuss the reality of the third season.
I don't know what I would want to see. I can't imagine. I mean, what I would want to see would in a third season would have been him not to have gotten caught the second season, like now that they've caught him, I really don't know what they can do because that was a big part of it was him being out there and killing people and her trying to hunt him down.
Yeah, it sort of could lead to a greater discussion of like this whole idea of the new golden age of television. I feel like we're starting to fairly objectively move into more of a silver age as we're getting spin-offs and we're getting see more seasons maybe than shows really should have. Another good example from of the British variety, I think, would be something like Sherlock, where the way they ended season three was so sort of, I'm not, it wasn't definitive as a conclusion, but it put all the characters and everything in such a odd place, I guess, that the idea that they're going to come back, and then you hear Moffat already talking about how it's gonna, season four is gonna have a big cliffhanger, and it's gonna be like, so, okay, so every 3 years you're gonna do three episodes of this show, and it's always gonna, it sounds like it's just gonna get very different, probably. Which, I mean, I'm all for the experimentation of that, and I still sort of trust the writers, though I feel like season three was maybe the weakest collection of episodes. I don't know. So I don't know if, I mean, with the fall, if it's just a, if it, I mean, dollars and cents are dollars and cents. If the show's successful, they're going to want to keep making more of it. And, yeah, I guess it's been successful in whatever capacity that's been measured and assessed. It's, on Netflix and it's on BBC Two. And I guess it does a pretty good percentage on the ratings there. So that would probably first and foremost be what would determine why they do more of it. And then you'd hope that it would be because they have an interesting idea, but maybe that follows, It's like, oh, well, they want you to do more. Okay, well, I guess we still want to play with these characters. What would be fun, guys? If they're doing what we're doing right now in their writer's room, being like, so what if she slept with him and got pregnant? What? That's a bad idea. Let's not do that. What if he has a twin that we didn't introduce yet, and then that adds all kinds of doubt as to which one of them was actually the. I think the copycat thing could seem likely. I think there'll definitely will be something more with Kitty, but I mean, I don't know. They did kind of put a nail in the Kitty thing too, right? I mean, they had her in custody, and then her mother came and got her, right? But she was still going to have to like go to a trial, I think, and she seemed really blasé about that, right?
Well, they never explained the website that he had her create, and then why he denied that he had her create it when he's admitting to the murders or whatever.
Yeah, that might lead me to think it is going to go into more of a sort of showcase thing,
Yeah.
where he's going to try to make a big, deal out of something, which I don't know if that really fits the character either. He seems very low key, at least. I mean, maybe now that he's been caught, it's like, well, now it's the big, I've been caught and I'm gonna take everybody for a ride and put everybody through the ringer with of my clever scheme or whatever, the final act of my clever scheme. But yeah, in terms of looking at it from the perspective of being like a third season, being like a third act, it really, yeah, it does feel doesn't quite feel like that's the case. I think season two felt pretty definitive towards an ending. I don't really have much else to say other than I'll check it out for sure. I don't know where it could go. I could I'm hoping it's something cool, obviously.
IMDb has no quotes.